Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel for six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott. RunCatalina.com, the Catalina Eco Marathon, Half Marathon, and 10K coming up Saturday, November 18th. DonateCAF.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We just sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million. Keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on iTunes on Babbittville.com. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest is Liz McTiernan, and she is a double bronze medalist, UCI World Cup 2016. She also is heading to Kona for her first shot at the Ironman Triathlon World Championships. How are you doing, Liz?
I'm good, thanks. Nice to speak to you, Bob.
And you are also the record holder at the New York City Triathlon.
I am. How exciting. I can believe it.
So, Liz, talk a little bit about growing up and what were you always sporty?
Yes, but never competitive. I only took up competitive sport aged 45.
Wait, what?
Yep.
Now, okay, so your academics, everything else, and then sports is sort of recreation, doing a little running,
No, yes, running, walking in the mountains, camping, horse riding, scuba diving, that kind of thing. You know, just fun stuff, always outdoors, really enjoyed it, but never competitive, no.
So in terms of scuba diving, is that when you got injured?
It is. It is. It was 2005, June the 19th. Do you know what? I've just passed my spinal cord injury accident anniversary and completely forgotten about it.
Wow. Well, that's good. That's a good sign that you've forgotten about it.
It is, because it means that life is busy and it doesn't really matter anymore. I have a disability that's acquired when I was an adult, but I've done so many more exciting things since that life before and life after kind of blurs together.
So you were scuba diving. Did you surface too quickly?
I did. I was doing technical diving, so using a rebreather called an Inspiration. Diving to a depth of 66 meters, which is a long way down.
Yes.
Times three for feet. I'm not good at maths, but a long way. And one tiny piece of equipment failed on the actual wing, which is my buoyancy compensator. The rebreather was fine, but the wing, and it sent me to the surface in less than a minute.
Oh.
And when I got to the surface, I was blind in one eye. I couldn't breathe, and I was paralyzed from the waist down, amongst other pretty horrible injuries. Mm-hmm. So I got helicoptered off the dive boats and into a recompression chamber. And had 27 recompression treatments.
Oh my God! But you could have died out there.
Oh yeah, I was pretty close to dying, and I did actually have a quick prayer and say that I loved my children, George and Rebecca, and I thought I was a goner, but I was very lucky to survive.
So it's one of those things where you're lucky to be alive, but now you have a new life. And you're in a wheelchair. How hard was that for you to adapt to?
Oh, very difficult, because I was a single parent to children of 9 and 10.
Wow.
And I'd only just moved up to the area I live in Lincolnshire 6 months previously, only just got myself a job, got the house, got things sorted. I was 40. Life is supposed to begin at 40, but mine nearly ended. So it took me a long time to come to terms. About 3 years, I did have really bad mental health issues.
Sure. And who wouldn't? And how important were your kids through that process?
Oh, they were amazing. I mean, it was a complete shock to them. I went away for a weekend diving, and their dad, who I'm divorced from, came back with them, and I wasn't there. And then I wasn't there for 4 months. Oh. So I missed my son's birthday, starting school, my daughter's birthday. Yeah, it was not good. But they were cooking, cleaning, shopping with me, pushing me around in my wheelchair. If they could have driven by then, they would have done, but they were too young. But it's not the kind of life experience that I wanted them to have. But they're both older, wiser, more empathetic, more sympathetic to those with disabilities, completely aware of all sorts of disabilities, physical and mental, and they've turned out to be wonderful people.
You know what's fascinating about that? Your kids basically forced to grow up quick, right? They were forced to mature at younger than you would expect. At the end of the day,
right,
it becomes a good thing because they do become more aware of what's around them and that people are different and some people need extra help and extra support.
Yes, indeed, it's a steep learning curve, but it has turned around, and their father was great. He was also quite supportive. In fact, he came and lived here with them so they could go back to school for 6 weeks and got compassionate leave from work, fully paid.
Wow.
Even though we'd been divorced years.
Right.
And he has always had them for holidays and weekends when they were growing up, so he was, even though he was married again and had a young family, very supportive. So
wow.
I appreciate that.
So when did sport, like you said, you had never been sporty, and now you think about it, there's more limitations and more things in your way, and all of a sudden sport becomes a big part of your life.
Yeah, it took about 5 years to find triathlon. I'd never heard of it. I live in a very rural community, a very small community of only about 700 people in the village I live in. And the nearest town is a market town. And I used to go swimming in a very old-fashioned swimming pool as part of my rehabilitation. I've always loved the water and scuba diving and all the rest. And the lifeguard said, "You're good at swimming. Why don't you try a triathlon?" I was like, "What is a triathlon?" So I Googled it, came up with this relay idea, thinking, oh, you can do it as a relay. I'm not sure I can do all the other bits, but maybe I could do the swim.
Right.
And then I thought, hang on a minute, I really quite fancy the idea of doing the whole thing. Had no idea. I ordered my first bike, hand bike, second hand. It arrived from America, looking like a Meccano set. I had no idea how it looked when it was put together. Took it to the bike shop, and they looked at it upside down and back to front. Kind of figured it out, and I went out and I did 3 kilometers on my bike, and that was about all I could manage. And then I thought, oh crikey, now I've got to get a racing wheelchair.
Yes.
That is even harder to learn how to do than the hand bike.
Yes, because it's almost like you've been shoehorned into this thing. At least on a hand cycle, you put your legs straight out, and
that's right,
they're fairly comfortable. The racing chair is not comfortable in any way, shape, or form.
No. I have partial sensation in my legs, but no pain or temperature from the knees down. So I have to adjust myself so that I'm not scrunched up completely. I'm not kneeling actually on my legs. I'm bent at the knees, but my legs dangle.
Right.
Which is a little bit more comfortable. But you have to be so tight in the race chair that your body doesn't move. So my hips kind of pop out the side guards. And I have popped the rivets before on an old chair, and I'm not big in the hip.
No, what was your first triathlon? And meanwhile, people don't understand it. A triathlete shows up, they got their wetsuit, they got their bike, and they're like, "Oh, look at all the equipment I got to bring." You guys need a roadie. You've got your hand cycle, your racing chair, your spare wheels, your wetsuit, the things that strap your legs together. I mean, the amount of stuff that you guys bring. What was your first race?
Well, my first triathlon was the British National Champs, and I got a silver medal.
So wait, that was your first ever triathlon?
Yes. 6 months after I started training.
Go big or go home. I like it.
Yeah, and then I went to the European Champs, and I beat the world champ in the swim and the bike in my second only triathlon.
Now, what was the relationship like with a lot of times with the challenged athletes? Like, listen, we need each other, right? We need for there to be categories in the Paralympics, we need more people in our categories be participating. At the same time, you want to beat the other person. But you need them and want to beat them at the same time.
Yes, although when I did paracycling, I swapped from triathlon after 2 years to just paracycling, trying to get to the Rio Paralympics.
Right.
We really need more women to be doing adaptive sport.
Right.
Because in the hand cycling, there are, I think there's about 12 people on the actual UCI world ranking list, but the people who usually compete, there's about six of us.
Wow.
And in the Rio Paralympics, only four women in my category actually got to go to the Paralympics.
Oh, my God. So it's just not that many.
No, and also we got combined with the H5 in the time trial, which is a completely different bike. It's a kneeling bike, and they have minimal impairments, usually double-leg amputees.
Right. Oh, so they put the kneelers in with the long seat.
Yes.
It's interesting because that was one of the big things we had in Kona. Was what should be the chair, because a kneeler could be a double amputee who has full use of abs, and
exactly.
In a kneeling bike, for our audience, kneeling bike, basically imagine sitting, you're standing on your knees in the cockpit, basically, and you're able to use your arms, your back, all your abs,
and legs, right?
In a long seat, basically, it's a recliner, and if someone like Liz, you couldn't use a kneeler.
I'm not able to kneel. I have too much spasticity in my legs.
Right. So the way it's set up for Ironman is the long seat is that is what you need to use, right? Because everybody can use a kneeler. Everybody can use a long seat.
Yes,
but not everybody can use a kneeler.
Yes.
So when Alex Zanardi came to Ironman and he used the kneeler, he wasn't part of the hand cycle division. He was in what they, basically.
Exhibition.
Exactly, exhibition. So I have a hand cycle division, which means you need to be in a long seat, which I totally agree with. And then they have an exhibition, which the jury's still out on that, because it is confusing for people when they see Alex coming in an hour before other people.
But he's on a kneeler.
That's what I mean.
He's an amputee, so he's bound to be faster.
Well, of course. And so realistically, he's not in the hand cycle division.
Okay.
But for the audience, people see him and they go, well, the average person wouldn't know the difference between a kneeler.
Sure.
All they
That's
see
right.
is a hand cycle.
Sure.
So,
I've heard that Alex Zanardi is, he's qualified to race Kona this year.
I don't know if it's qualified. Unless he's using, and I talked to him about that when I had him on the show, to use a long seat, because I think that would be great if he was in a long seat. Then it's apples to apples, right? Everybody's using the same
absolutely.
Equipment.
Well, Jets Platz is a Netherlands competitor, and he's qualified at the same race as me at Luxembourg, and he's swapped categories. He's an amputee, but he was an H5 kneeling hand cyclist.
Mm-hmm.
But because of his impairment, he has one leg that he can't bend. So it makes he used to have it literally in sticking out at the bottom of his kneeling hand cycle.
Interesting.
But with a carbon guard round, which is not ideal.
No.
So he's had a classification change, and he's now an H4. So he will be obviously competing in Kona on the reclining.
Right, on a long seat.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was talking to Oz Sanchez. Oz has been at Ironman and won a gold medal in Beijing in the on his kneeler, and he was saying, says everybody feels that the kneeler gives us an advantage, but when you're talking 112 miles, he feels that the long seat is preferable because you're under the wind rather
more
than
more aerodynamic.
Yeah, yeah.
And we do have the kneelers have a distinct advantage when they're powering up hills.
Exactly. Oh,
so
I agree.
You can't put any weight over the front wheel at all, and you're only using your upper body from the pecs up.
Right.
Literally in a long seat.
Yes.
Abs maybe on the start, but actually the H3 women are faster than the H4 women, and they're almost the same in the not in the same in the men's. The H4 men are definitely faster, but abs sometimes don't really come into it. Unless there's tight cornering and things like that,
right.
Or quick acceleration needed, but the we are more definitely more aerodynamic downhill
yes.
and on the flat.
You know, it's interesting. Over time, there used to be we used to have a great rivalry when wheelchair racing was sort of at its peak here in the States. Mm-hmm. There was a guy who won Boston five times named Jim Knob. And then there was a who was paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And then there was an athlete named Craig Blanchett, who was the original Nike Just Do It athlete. And he was an amputee from birth. And they both used long seat, but I remember, you know, not long seat, they had just racing chairs. So mm-hmm. this was before hand cycles were even around. Sure. But I remember Jim saying, you know, I've got a distinct disadvantage because I've got legs, right? I've got extra weight to carry. And then, you know, the more he trained, he realized, you know what, I've got more leverage. So, for a while there, he was going, I mean, maybe I should just amputate these things because he was like, I can't compete with him because I've got these.
Wow.
And then he realized, okay, so it's just funny how things change over time.
I have got a friend, Joe Townsend, who's a Paralympian, GB paratriathlon, and he... you'd think that in the racing chair, he definitely has an advantage. Well, it's a bit difficult. Weight advantage, because his power-to-weight ratio is immense, because he has no weight of his legs.
Right.
But he has to then have a kind of tray system where he puts his chest, because otherwise he'll topple out.
Exactly.
Of the racing chair. And cornering and things, we can. If you've got hip movement, you can hip hitch. If you've got abs, you can do that. But he's got to strap himself in tight. On the hand cycle, now I always used to think, oh, amputees have got an advantage. No legs, no weight,
right.
Less wind resistance. But when it comes to cornering, Joe can easily tip his hand cycle because he has no weight of his legs on the front wheel.
Right.
So...
Yeah. It's funny because the reality is when you're talking to able-bodied athletes, if somebody's 140 pounds or somebody's 170 pounds, there's different advantage and disadvantage to both. So
There are. And if the heavier you are, the faster you go downhill.
Yep.
But the harder it is to
go uphill. Yeah, I know. It's pretty fascinating. And I think we're still in the infancy stage in terms of, especially in triathlon and paratriathlon.
Oh, definitely.
So you did triathlon for a couple of years, then decided, hey, I want to get to Rio. And you were doing, and those races are, that's a 20K, right? The race for Rio? The time trial is.
For the time trial, for my category, it's anything up to 20K. And it's usually around 16 kilometers.
Okay.
Then the road race is the next day, and it can be up to 60K for H4 women.
Wow.
And in fact, one of the most recent World Cup in Emmen was, I believe it was 58 kilometers. Which is a long way.
It's a long way. That's a real long way.
It's a long way to race continuously.
Yeah.
Normally, it's about a marathon distance, so 26 miles, 42K, normally.
Normally. So as you were heading towards Rio, and the problem is, obviously, you got to qualify, and there's very few spots. How close did you get?
Well, last year, I ended up ranked first in the world in the UCI rankings for a short time.
Yeah.
And that was before this final selection for Rio. I just got the gold, the bronze medals, gold, big mistake there,
yeah.
Bronze medals, wishful thinking, in the World Cup in Bilbao, which was before the selection had closed. The Russian athletes, Svetlana is one of my competitors and very, very good. She was not able to compete because of the
Russian ban.
Yes, the Russian ban, which is unfortunate because she's coached by my coach and I don't believe she's a doper.
Right.
It's a blanket ban, and it wasn't really fair for the Paralympians to suffer and not the Olympians. Go there. So I had high hopes that I might actually be selected because there are so few women in my category in H4. But unfortunately, no.
And that was all just, it was a selection. It wasn't there wasn't really a process, was there?
We don't have the field trials that you guys have in the States.
Okay.
So there's no qualifying at the national champs or one particular competition. I was told that you had to be a gold medalist.
To be guaranteed a spot.
To guarantee a spot. But Karen Dark, who went as an H3 woman, the only hand cyclist in the UK, was not a gold medalist at World Cup level. So... But they have a very woolly selection policy, put it that way.
You know, it's funny.
Maybe age might have not counted in my favor.
Oh, I'm sure it didn't. Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because I think Australia for years in the regular, in the able-bodied triathlon world, they've had selection, right, rather than mm-hmm. a Olympic trials. And they always get into trouble with it. And, so it's to me, like it or not, the U.S. system of, you finish top nine at the test race mm-hmm. and only two can make it. So, you had Gwen Jorgensen last year and Sarah True qualify. And, I represent Katie Zafaris. And mm-hmm. she finished sixth and didn't make the either sixth or eighth in the test race and didn't make the team because there's two Americans already. But that was outlined in the rules and everybody knew that. So
as long as you know.
Exactly. It's fair.
And then you work towards that goal and then try your best. And if it's not good enough, then at least you know you've tried.
Exactly. It, what happens though, they get in a room and they go, listen, Liz is older, will select so-and-so because she'll be able to go next time as well, right? Or we'll give her that experience.
This is the excuse that they like to fund people for 3 Paralympic cycles.
Right.
But I know plenty of people that have done 1 Paralympics and retired.
Of course.
So,
yeah, I know.
That for me, it's disappointing in more ways than just for myself. It's disappointing that other women hand cyclists.
Sure. Well, I agree.
To have a role model aren't going to see that they can actually make it.
Yeah, and I've not been very sold on a lot of the Paralympic rulings on different things. I just think it's very arbitrary. Mm-hmm. The most important thing, though, way more important in the Paralympics, is the Ironman.
It is.
Way more important. I remember interviewing Jan Frodeno. He won Olympic gold in triathlon, and he won the Ironman. Which was more impactful? The Ironman. No question. So for you, we've only had one woman to finish the Ironman World Championship. And when did you start thinking, okay, I want to go? It's one thing to do a sprint try or do a 40K bike or a 60K bike. It's another thing to say I'm going to do a 2.4-mile swim, a 112-mile bike, and a 26.2-mile run. That's a different gig. When did that mindset come in?
I always knew of the existence of Ironman when I did my triathlon for 2 years. I always thought I might do it when I was 50, but then I got too wrapped up in the paracycling. Because I didn't qualify for the Rio Paralympics last year, I thought I need another goal. I need something to achieve as a personal goal.
Right.
That I don't have any politics. There is selection, but it's clear cut. I have to go to this race, qualify, and then I'm allowed to go.
Right.
And also for me, it's a personal ambition for lots of reasons, but also just to prove to myself that I can actually get there and do it and hopefully finish.
And you're how old now?
52.
That is so cool. And this will be your will Kona be your first full Ironman?
It will. I've done 2 half Ironmans this year, one in Luxembourg to qualify, and the other one in Florida, Haines City, just because I'd never ever done that distance before.
Right. What did you feel with that distance? Does that suit you?
I love it.
Yeah, I figured.
I love it. But I always say that you drop off speed as you get older, but your endurance increases.
Yes.
But it's a completely different kettle of fish, actually building up endurance on a hand cycle and a racing wheelchair.
Yes.
So it's not just run longer and a little bit faster, a bit slower, but go longer. It's the technique, especially in the racing chair, because I've only done it for 3 years now. The hand cycling I've done for 7, and swimming I've done forever.
Right.
So I'm quite proficient at the swim. But it's the race. I'm not too bothered about the racing chair. It's the bike that I really have to concentrate on now because 112 miles with your arms only.
In that wind.
Wind
and heat.
In the heat.
Yes.
With the hills.
Yes. I mean, this is a different gig because in the other races you do, obviously nutrition is always important, but way more important here because it's such a long day.
Yes, well, I did. I went on a training camp with my coach, Ralph Lynn-Shulton, in Florida in February. And we spent 2 weeks doing really long rides, 4.5-hour rides. That's a really long ride for me.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
And he was saying you have to practice your nutrition. You have to have 60 grams of carbohydrate every hour.
Right.
And I was like, well, Ralph, where am I going to put that on the bike?
Yeah.
Because there isn't a little bento box on the top of the tube. Because there's no space. There's
right.
So you end up either stuffing it down your shorts, taping it to the side of the bike. I've got three bottle holders on the bike, which all weighs quite a lot.
Yes, yeah.
And also it's at the back of the bike, which isn't where I want the weight. I'd like some bottle holders at the front of the bike, but then I wouldn't be able to reach them. So, yeah, it's the Ironman Florida. That was an interesting experience because it was very hot.
Yes. Oh, that's good.
The run was, yes, it is good, but run was very hilly for a wheelchair athlete.
Yep, which is
so
good,
it's very
too.
Interesting how they decide where I can race and where I can't race.
We've dealt with the same thing. A friend of ours named Glenn Hartrick, who you met this weekend, when Glenn was injured 3 years ago, and he's been trying to do an Ironman race and just finding a course that was considered appropriate by the Ironman had been a challenge. He's actually doing Ironman Florida in November.
Ah, the full light. Yes, that's a very flat course, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, that actually is one of the first races in the Ironman family to sell out each year because it is
okay.
considered a perfect entry level Ironman for
what
somebody because it is pretty much flat. But
yep.
you know, so the other side of flat is you never are relaxing. You know, and you always have a little bit of wind, so you know it's still 100, it's still 140.6, right? At the any way you look at it, it's still a long way to go.
Yes.
So what do you? You have not been to Kona or the Big Island, and I'm sure you've heard the horror stories. So
I have.
You've heard a lot of them. But what's interesting is now that I know more about your background as a hand cyclist, and you've been traveling around the world doing racing at this elite level. You certainly have the high-end speed. And the key is, to finish the race, which is always the first goal, you just got to finish that hand cycle by 5:30 in the afternoon.
Well, this is the cutoff points as well, meeting all the cutoff points.
Well, but for you, if you're swimming, you're for an Ironman swim, how fast do you think you could go?
Well, a standalone Ironman, when I was doing triathlon, I would go off and do 5K swim for fun. Because I love it.
That's great.
And I did an Ironman swim in Coniston in the Lake District, which is beautiful but freezing cold.
Right.
It was about 12 degrees
centigrade.
It was horrible. Couldn't feel my hands after this, or my face. But I did it in 1 hour 21. And I hadn't swum that much 5 years ago, really.
Wow.
So I'm hoping,
yep.
but wait, I'm hoping
yeah.
to do a really good swim. But a swim that will allow me to be relaxed and
exactly.
find it easy and then have the energy for the bike.
Yep.
But I haven't swum with 2,000 other people.
Right. But you know what? Again, you just let them go and then do your own thing. And you'll wave
yeah.
through some people and you'll be fine. And actually, yeah. during the week, you'll probably find people who swim about the same as you do, other 120 guys, and say, listen, let's all line up to the left and go off together.
Yes, that's what I'd love. I mean, in Luxembourg, we had a really good rolling start.
Yes.
And the pros went, with men and women, and then the challenge athletes.
Yes.
And then we had almost a... I think we had 20 minutes on top of the age groupers.
Wow, so you had a big gap.
Oh, it was fantastic. I did a 34-minute swim for that one, so I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, Ralph was saying, just do a nice, relaxed swim. Don't go all out because it's hilly on the bike.
Yes.
So that was the plan. And, I thought, wow, it's not congested. There's a few people overtaking me in the age group because they're, 21-minute swimmers.
Right.
And that's great. That's fine. I've got a friend who's doing swimming the channel who has MS.
Yes.
And he's based in Norfolk, so I'm hoping to go and join him for a couple of sea swims.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, that would be great. And because it does that, the rolling, the waves and things like that in Kona sometimes take people by surprise because there are some swells. It's not like
sure.
a beach break or anything like that, but there can be some swells out there. The nice thing is there's so many huge buoys. It's very, you know,
it's a very straightforward course, isn't it?
Very straightforward, yeah. And then the deal is the transition for you and, you know, and then just trying to get in by 5:30 in the afternoon. And with your cycling background, that's always a thing that hampers other folks who get into this, is they don't have that cycling background, and you've got a pretty extensive hand cycling background, and you know how to go fast, you know how to work with power, and it'll be a nutrition thing and not getting carried away early in the bike.
Yes.
I remember Oz Sanchez was telling me, because he always raced on his kneeler, and when he came to Kona and was in a long seat, he's like, Bob, that thing is so comfortable. I fell
not after 8 hours, it's not.
Yeah, he fell asleep during the bike ride in Kona. Yeah, he ended up in the rumble strip, those little strips on the side of the road. That woke him up, because he's like, you're laying back. It's like you're in a couch. I'm going along. Next thing I'm like, I'm in the side of the road going, wait, oh, I better wake up. It's like, I'm eating. I'm laying down. Oh, my God. That's going to be fun for you.
I do get that joke sometimes when people see me, they say, don't fall asleep.
Yes.
That looks comfortable. I'm like, yeah, really, on my neck, it's not that comfortable.
No. So when you look at your road racing career and time trial career, what do you look at as your best day on the hand cycle in terms of when you felt just amazing and had a great race?
Ooh, crikey. I have to go back to Bilbao, where I won the 2 bronze medals.
Yes.
It's my favorite place to race for a number of reasons. They have a foundation for people with disabilities who organize the races every year. And I've been to that area about 5 times before it was a proper C1 race, and then when it was a C1 race, and then again when it was the World Cup. And they're amazing. It's Catalonian, so, if you know the history about Spain and stuff, Catalan wanted to be a separate entity to the rest of Spain. They have a different way of, different identity, personal identity for that area. But they're just such amazing people. They're so helpful. They arranged someone to come and pick me up from the hotel, take all my equipment, take me to the meetings, take me out to dinner, just help me in any way, shape, or form.
Very cool.
So I love it. And they gave us red wine for our on the podium, but unfortunately I couldn't take the Rioja home because I was flying. But, I just felt really good. I did my best average speed ever on quite a long time trial course.
What did you average?
Oh, do you know? I would remember it. I think it was 31.8 over 16K.
Wait.
That's kilometers an hour.
31.8?
Yeah.
Wow. So. Yeah. That's great.
I'm flying.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So will your kids get to go to Kona with you?
I'm really hoping so. It's on my daughter's bucket list.
Yes.
She just turned 22 last week.
Wow.
And she's just starting a master's in October. So unfortunately, she should be doing her master's on the October 5th, but she's hoping to miss the first week or two and come. Now, my son is working as a graduate, having finished his master's last year, and he's doing his rotations at work. He's living with his girlfriend in Reading, so they've got huge student debt.
Yes.
And rent to pay and all the rest. So they're not too sure they'll be able to afford it. But I am really hoping that they all come out to support, because that would be fantastic.
So you were wearing CAF in New York.
I'm really happy to represent CAF. They've helped me in the past. In fact, they helped me get to my very first world championships in triathlon in 2011 when I went to Beijing.
Wow. That's cool.
I got a travel grant. And then the following year, I managed to get some nice race wheels.
Nice.
With help from a grant. And then other years, I've used them to pay my coach, and then also to do some more traveling to the World Cups.
Love it. So,
of course, I'm being supported with a small grant to help pay for some of the costs of getting to Kona.
Yes. Yeah, no, it's certainly not cheap to get there or to stay there.
Goodness, no. I was quite surprised when I've had a quote for the airfare.
Yeah.
And for the hotel, the official hotels, but yikes.
Yikes. So New York, you won it, broke the course record, and I think a few years ago you have a bad crash there?
No, not me. I had a bad crash in Berlin.
Oh, it was Berlin.
Berlin Marathon.
And what happened there?
Ooh, I was drafting some very fast male hand cyclists,
mm-hmm.
Thinking that 31 kilometers an hour is a lovely average to do a PB in the marathon.
Yeah.
When I heard a huge bang, and the next thing I know, I'm sliding along the floor on my side.
Oh.
Having done a 360 in the hand cycle, which meant I'd scraped both my elbows. I cut my face with my sunglasses.
Oh.
My helmet was a bit dented, and my derailleur and my front mech were both bent out of shape, and the bike was pretty scraped up.
Wow.
I don't speak much German, but I managed to get a bystander to say, straighten this out as best you can, and pick me up, and I'll keep going. So I did finish the race, but the bike was not in good shape.
Was that your worst crash?
That was indeed my worst crash ever. I've crashed on a race course in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
And that was on tarmac. And so I just kind of burnt all the skin off my arms. Road rash is not nice.
No.
We don't tend to, in a hand cycle, you're a bit safer. You don't go over the handlebars. You don't fall out of the bike.
Right.
But what you do is you're strapped in with your feet and your waist, holding onto the hand pedals, and you just kind of scrape along the side of your body. It's not very pleasant.
Not very pleasant enough. Well, the nice thing about triathlon is you're not sitting in a draft, right? And there's less of a chance of that type of stuff happening.
But that's half the excitement factor of the road racing.
Yeah, that's what you love.
Oh, yeah, I love it. It just makes it more dynamic and exciting and faster.
Does it?
I wish they would make it draft legal for paratriathlon because it's great. I don't understand why it's not because they follow UCI rules.
Right. That's actually a really good point. Did it when you moved into this longer triathlon? Did it surprise you that you enjoyed it, knowing that you love the give and take of the fast, high intensity racing?
It's because you're pushing yourself beyond what you think you're capable of. So I like that aspect, and I like I'm amazed that I've improved so much despite my age, because you don't expect to have like a 208 minute PB in different events. But last in Luxembourg, I actually did a personal best in the half marathon at the end of the race.
Ah, where'd you go?
In Luxembourg.
Yeah. How fast?
I did a 1 hour 20 or 1 hour 21.
Wow.
Half marathon. It was almost completely flat. Slight rise and a bit of headwind and paper cups and sponges. And
everywhere.
People.
Yeah, yeah.
People. I have to say that's the scariest bit, the hand cycle's fine. As long as people realize that you're going to blast past them at great speed, like 78 kilometers an hour downhill. And then you've only got one break, and you're thinking, oh, please don't move, please don't move, please don't move. But the run, because they can't hear you.
Right. And they're a little zombie-ish.
Oh, my goodness. Definitely. And running over cups and every discarded bottles in a racing wheelchair is not fun.
You've probably not done anything at night, which is what's going to happen in Kona. You'll be, the deal is that you, when you're on that marathon course and you're, coming up Pay and Save Hill, and for a lot of folks, they end up going up backwards, a lot of the wheelers, because it's so steep. And then when you're on the Queen Highway, there's some downhills where you'll be flying and you've got runners going both ways and cups and sponges, et cetera. So, that would be good. That'll be good for a chat with Carlos or Minda or some of the other folks who've been there. Just how they, where do they stay? They try to go in the middle of the road. What do they, and having a headlamp would be
a good
thing.
Yeah, I have got one. I'm wondering, I guess I put it in my special needs bag.
Yep. Yeah, well, you just put it in your transition bag, you know, because you'll need it for the run. You won't need it for the bike.
Okay.
If you're needing it for the bike, you're not going to be finishing it in front of the cutoff
time. No, I won't need it for the bike. I want to make sure I finish the bike and get on to the run.
Yes. So what would it mean to you to finish? This is the most important event in our sport, for you to go to Kona and become, you know, the second woman to finish, potentially becoming the fastest woman to finish, but just getting to that finish line. What do you think it would mean to you?
I think it would prove to myself and to other people that despite age, disability, whatever challenge you have in life, whatever you've been through in the past, you can achieve a goal that you set yourself, constantly improve, just to set a mark for others to follow. I mean, I don't think I'll do it again. I'm hoping and aiming for the Tokyo Paralympics. So my coach wants me to go back to hand cycling. But this whole year of endurance sport has taught me that I can actually train harder, push myself harder, do two trainings, hard training sessions a day, still recover. So it's more about what I've learned personally as an athlete that's important to me. And, of course, it would be fantastic to be the second woman to hopefully finish. And then hopefully way more women will be inspired to come along and give it a go, because at the moment there just aren't enough of us.
No. Well, the other thing is we're talking 05 when you were injured. So basically you've been an athlete for 12 years.
Only seven.
Oh, seven. That's right.
Only seven.
Seven years you've been an athlete. Mm-hmm. And growing up, you were recreational. You obviously you were out there participating in things, but you were never on a cross-country team or a cycling team or that type of stuff. Are you sort of surprised at this yourself, right? You've probably learned a lot about yourself. Not so much the racing chair and the hand side, but just as being an athlete and wondering, gosh, I wonder if I'd been an athlete back then.
Oh, do you know, I always wish I'd started younger, but that would have meant that I'd have my disability younger.
Right.
So actually, I always think this is my third career, because I used to be a graphic designer working in children's publishing in London in my 20s.
Yep.
I had my children in my late 20s, 30s. I went freelance, then I retrained as a teacher, taught in post-compulsory FE, further education, did that, then had my accident, then had to reinvent myself, how I describe it, and not compare myself to what I was before, what I could do before, what I enjoyed before, and totally go out on a limb and try something new, which was triathlon. So I'm so happy I've had this opportunity, because I've met people, gone places, been involved with so many different sports. I just love it. I absolutely love it. I don't want to stop, but obviously I am getting older. And if I was 20, I'm not sure I'll be as old as the flying nun and still doing triathlon.
But you know what's funny is one of our guys, Bill Bell, who's 94 now, he didn't get into any of this stuff till he's 55. And then, you know, like he's done over 30 Ironman. He's done everything.
Wow.
Ultramans, all these type of things. And he goes, listen, you know, I got into it because there was a health scare. And I was supposed to do it for my doctor and start walking. And then I like to run. And I start running more. And so, you know what? You didn't get into it till you're later, which means that you're fresher. You can do it forever.
Well, there is that. They do say that if you start very young and you have a long career, you're more, you kind of burn out.
Yes, you do. And you're not burning out. You're loving it.
I'm not burning out.
I love it. Liz, thank you so much for taking time. So nice to have you part of the CAF family, for one, and part of the Ironman family. That is
well, I'm really pleased to be part of the CAF family and the Ironman family. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait.
And New York. It's funny, I was racing there this weekend, too, and I'd forgotten how cool that event is, just between the fast swim in the Hudson, the totally safe bike ride on the West Side Park, West Side Highway, and then the run through Central Park, which is hard, way harder than people think, but all three of those are iconic sort of iconic parts of the city that are put together for this triathlon?
They are. It's my one of my favorite races because of it. You also get the crowd support.
Yes.
Which is amazing. You're never on your own. There's other other competitors who always compliment you on the way, or you can encourage someone else. Really nice atmosphere. I didn't have anybody making rude remarks or not listening to the marshal for the run through Central Park. They were aghast when I was speeding past them in the racing chair, not able to brake, not able to stop. Help! But I love it. I'm going to keep going for as long as possible to that race, even if I don't train for triathlon. I'm sure I could still manage it.
I think
a small Olympic.
Yeah, you can get you can get your way through that.
I can.
Yeah. Liz McTiernan has been our guest. She is going to Kona in October. Liz, I'll see you. We'll see you in Kona, if not before.
That would be fantastic, Bob. See you in Kona. Thanks very much.
Love it. Again, we are brought to you by ToughManTry.com, VeloFix.com, ATVSwimSpas.com, RunCatalina.com, the Catalina Eco Marathon, Half Marathon 10K. Coming up Saturday, November 18th, DonateCAF.com to help other athletes like Liz. Challenged Athletes Foundation. We just sent out 2,448 grants totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on iTunes. I'm Babbittville. And as always, endurance lives here.